session number 11203, wheel 5.
Mr. M. Scott, rear 5. Would you like to tell me any further memories you have of Ralph and Mr. Scott?
Yes, I would. To my way of thinking, and having spent virtually a year in that particular camp, I would start with by mentioning the 2 to 3 day long train journey from Mainz right down to Salzburg, and that being some 20 miles from Lof. The Germans herded us into cattle trucks at Mainz, and the conditions were absolutely appalling. So this set the standard, as we saw it, of prisoners arriving under very disgusting conditions. I think the standard was 8 horses and 40 men. We had 40 men plus, more than 50. The facilities for normal functions were absolutely nil. The people managed to keep their tin helmets and that sort of thing. They came in for all sorts of obvious uses. I think that that train journey shook everybody who was concerned with it. Because arriving at a camp, we never knew anything about, of course, was a shaker. And true British spirit, everybody kept their end up. We all backed each other out of every mistake. The first thing the Germans did was they took us into the main courtyard, a great ground there, and they shaved our hair off. Individually, everybody had to go up and have their head shaved, and that, of course, for some of the chaps who did for their hair was not very pleasant. My face, I had a lot in it, so I didn't worry too much about that. But that was a sort of first initial relay. Then stripped us of any personal possessions, took notes of what they'd taken from each prisoner, and we never heard, of course, anything about them after that, but we went through the motions. The rate of prisoner intake, starting from the time we arrived there, got continuously bigger and bigger, till we finished up with 1,450 officers. And they were in rooms overcrowded to the extent that a room 45 by 20 would house between 70 and 90 men on 3-tier bunks, and with no facilities for writing anything or having it. We're all jammed in on top of each other. And the health point of view was bad because the windows had to be closed for blackout during the night time, and that was impossible really. And we were at a low end. I say that really purposely because I think everybody was astounded that we'd had this sort of treatment. And the people that were there came from every regiment of the army, right from the aid guards, all the top ranking regiments. Anyway, the worst thing we had there had not arrived. There was no food at all. It was dreadful. There were no parcels, Red Cross parcels. The food position was so bad that people were getting extended time, even though it was sort of a reverse position due to lack of food. And it was getting to the point where they had to climb stairs to go up 3 floors, and they were getting exhausted by the time they climbed that height. The Germans themselves issued two potatoes to each officer, and a piece of bread, which was cut into seven, a loaf of bread, which was cut into seven pieces, was given to the seven men. The effect of the bad food position, and then the tremendous depressions which came over people who suddenly found themselves locked up in shocking conditions, was very tragic, because a lot of people find it difficult to get over that position very quickly. There was a tremendous amount of depression, and I think I've mentioned before on this recording that the senior officers were up to throw their hands up and say, well, it's all up, making assessments of the position back home. The Germans were taking France and all that over England. And that was a sort of final blow when we realized we were 400 miles into Germany. We were then looking as if they were going to come out from top dog. And it took an awful lot of swallowing. And like in all things in life, there were some very fine men in Kurwitz, in Laufen. And these sort of people always rise to the occasion. And they're a great help to some people who weren't so adequate. That was my feeling. The Germans were absolutely top of the league for everything. They were so pleased with themselves that they'd beaten everybody in battle. And the commandant gave them instruction that nobody would look out of windows or anywhere near the exits of a window. And then they proceeded to shoot Lieutenant Gies, or the DLR, through the head, killing him, because he was painting a portrait of the landscape, several miles, I would think, away. I never saw that. It's a terrible blow to lose on the young officer like that.
Was there any kind of inquiry or this inquiry on this?
Well, I think there was, because we had General Horton, who commanded the 1st Brigade, the 5th Powder Division, and he obviously would have taken up, he would be beyond the army, would be a second or ten, so I would have been involved in it. There was a huge outcry amongst the prisoners, naturally, and I'm not sure it would have been taken up, not only with the Germans, but with the Red Cross, everybody who was looking after our interests.
Did the prisoners show their feelings about this in any particular way over a period of time? Did they?
I think they were a bit frightened. I think one's bound to be on a thing like that. When somebody gets shot through the head, it's tricky. And in a way, this man had set up a precedent which could be followed up by somebody else. As it wasn't until later at one other camp when a very fine officer got caught in the wire, trying to get over the wire, and was shot. But that was really a different thing. This other chap was purely painting his hobby.
Did you ever find out what happened to the Germans? Did they take him away? Did they take him out of the camp?
I never heard anything like that. I think that one goes back to the two worst things. One is the food, which is absolutely the end. And that was the thought that everybody had in their mind, because it was affecting their body. When you haven't got anything to eat and no sense of experience, you don't really appreciate what. We got to the point, it may sound ridiculous, but when we looked around the room, see if there was anything soft that you could chew, which is a nasty state of affairs. Some people may not agree with that comment, but I know my case, one or two others I was with. Then that brought us to another point. The Germans detail with officers by rank into different rooms. Junior officers go among their own captains and the next majors and the next colonels and the above will go into special rooms. That was typically German. Juniors have the right way of inviting the world of military sort of man. It didn't matter whether you were the Scottish division or the barons or these gents or anybody else. You just got the facilities in the rooms were very little. You use your few clothes. And British government said that they would send out and did send out a great tent for each officer. But they never got to us because they were siphoned off. Must have been because they were all certainly sent by the government. And very important. Now, there is an aspect regarding escaping. My feeling is, and it's a personal one, that everybody got lowered so far down the line that you couldn't see any horizon. I mean, you had to be a super optimist to think you could escape from there, Central Germany. But it was done, and it was done by P.R. Reed, who wrote the Kogut story. And he and one or two others, and I can't really remember them, I remember a face and not a name, but they went into an area where they had, in this sort of cellar place, a whole lot of placards and that kind of thing. And obviously been some sort of instruction for troops or school people like that. And they got under one of these big covers and dug a hole out through into the backyard and got out. The only thing I can say that there were a lot of people who were very keen to get in on this. And I wouldn't say that I was thing, but I often offered my help, but it was full up. It was obviously too many. That was the first time I'd sort of, I didn't realize what I was saying, but it was to get out without proper preparation.
This would be the very early days, and did they, to get out like this range and escape this way, what kind of preparations had they been to go through?
Well, it was so quick. That they didn't. But your point is very valid, and I could, if I may, bring it into a little later. And it is one of the bones of contention that apply to two or three camps further on. But Reed went out with another, I think, two chaps. Except one of them was in the Buffs. Scarlet Ohio, I think his name. It was called up, you know, his figure. Got up, but he got caught. And he was sent to Kodits. And of course, most people know now that he wrote the Kodits story. And there was a nucleus of British officers, about 60. I'm digressing slightly now, in order to pull all the bits in, who were at Kovitz, who were sent to the other camps. The D was one of them, he came to one of the camps up in the Hanover, I think. And Arlington sons were picked up and sent to Kovitz, where three padres were sent. Because they didn't toe the line with the Germans and he sent them there. They're a nice man. I'm sorry.
You're talking about.
I was wrong there. The comment I've just made regarding the three padres is not in point of fact accurate. as I remember now, the Padres were sent to Columbus, correct, and remained there for till the end.
You're talking about the hierarchy, the different heads from the different ranks. Did that show itself in other aspects of life in the camp?
Yes, I think the social status of men, and not necessarily their arrangements, was very noticeable, because one generally messed with about six or eight men to a table. They had a very rephrase there. There was a distinct line by regiments. To give an example, the Rifle Brigade chaps all stuck together. There were only two or three guards officers there. So they messed with somebody in the cavalry. The pattern was that they were the more elite soldiers. Not to say they're any better than anybody else, but that division began to appear to make itself noticed. And I was very fortunate. I knew one or two chaps there that I met on the way through. And I suppose I could say I was a sort of commoner in a way. My best friend is a chap called Bill Burton, who is absolutely solid as a rock, first grade chap. And unfortunately, he finished the war, got home, and went out. He was a tree planting out in Assam, or something like that. He got a bite and died after the war, which is very sad. But Bill Burton and a handful of what I would call the backbone, a really marvelous chap. There was no sort of nonsense or anything like that. The thing that I felt, and I moved in a reasonable sense, well, not a very terrific high one, but fairly high, there's an unwritten sort of feeling, I think, that the Rifle Brigade chaps were pretty good, you know. And I think that a lot of the chaps there were 51st Highland Division. And they were damn nice lot, a little bit more down to earth, I think, in some cases.
Did it have any effects upon the relationships in the camp, that there was a hierarchy of elite regimental officers?
Completely, you wouldn't know. If you walked into the room, you wouldn't realize. It's not there. There's sort of stupid things that came out. I remember parents were allowed to send parcels out eventually, prisoners and all. And if you looked at the type and quality of the presents that were sent out, they were right in line with the people who got them. Things like trucker boots and duffel coats. You know, it just, nobody said anything, there's no criticism or anything like that. It's just one of those things was there. I think from my point of view, there were several down PLI. So of course we were all friendly, and we'd come up along the marvelous line and down right in the in fact we were four of us only in the barons who went out of the biggest town of the war, which we get to a bit later on. So the barons appeared pretty solid, I think. I don't wish to be in any way derogatory to these people, but I think you must follow this one up. It happens in the day. There's a chap who's up the road here. He's not an impressive or anything like that, but he's just that sort of head in the air of it. So.
Thank you.
those things. I didn't mention, and I should have done right from the very beginning, that this camp, this place we were in, was the mission for Salzburg summer palace, or was previously, and it had been turned into a camp, or wasn't it? And it was on the river Salzburg. It flowed, I think, something like 8 knots, tremendously fast, whereas the mountains, of course, are in the area. And
what was the quality of the German troops guarding you? Were they first line troops?
I think the guy from there were fairly good. Yes, I think they were fairly good. It's hard to bring that to mind. I think they were because it wasn't one of these camps with turrets all around it and barbed wire and all that. It was a great big solid building. One of the, as we realized at that point, one of the things that came up, and I suffered from it myself, I regret to say, was that the chaps not let us from home. Their wives had ducked out and gone off to somebody else. And that caused us sort of hell. And I got my letter. I was engaged to a girl in the Marines. And I just got a letter saying, I'm sorry if you're off with a captain in a wrong area or something. You know. And it shows you just the opposite when you get something like that. When you can't do anything about it, you're stuck.
But you know, how did that affect? Obviously, different men
coping
different ways,
yes.
Not with that kind of knowledge.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you what the thing that saved me. My father never lived a monster. But he wrote me a marvelous letter. And I think that settled it. If I hadn't had it.
Were some
men
driven to desperate
straits
through this kind of
mission? Yes, I think there were. I had one traveller when we came back from Curtains. Got on the phone when we arrived in England. And I haven't been heard of him yet, mine as well. And he rang his wife up and she said, "Where the hell? And he landed, just landing back." There's a funny thing, there's a smaller world, but this boy's name came up. My son was at Oxford, Christchurch, and this very name came up, must have been the son who was at my funeral, and possibly you know nothing about that, possibly you know, it's quite different family, but I just thought, what a small world.
Was there an opportunity for some kind of counseling to be built in Britain in terms of padres? Were they able to help with?
I think so. Well, actually, I didn't pick them up there, but later when we get to COVID, sometimes so much of it did happen there. But I can put this into line, possibly. It accentuates the point we've been making about the difference between the here and there. Let's see how I put this. We had a state of affairs which I was personally amazed at, and I'm jumping forward in my to a time when we were at Eichstadt. We were visitors' camp, and I really was made because it was a big camp. And at Eichstadt, a tunnel was dug, and 65 officers got out. And as you can imagine, it was a wonderful experience. One of the as his friends ride out, he's going up on the hillside looking down on the perimeter lights of the camp and ride out. But anyway, that's another story. The point I was trying to make was, and I never said anything to him about it when I was seeing him. There's tremendous criticism of that break, which was brilliant. There's no doubt about it, he was absolutely masterly. Took months to do 40 tons of earth out of the thing to dig it. When we got the reaction of Reed, he was very praiseworthy of the effort, but he said we've done it all wrong. We shouldn't have gone out 6 feet, we should have gone 2 or 3, and first would imagine that. But after all the efforts that had gone in, and it was very critical that the people in Kovitz had all the documentation, they had all the forged this, that, and the other. And if you have been beastly now, but if you're really, to anybody who's been spending time digging tunnels all over the pit, to sit on your bottom doing passports and things is essential, but it's not necessarily a sort of differently to get a tunnel. And there are numerous ones dug in this little saga of camps. So that I was very surprised at that, and it's in the Kovitz saw now criticism of the 65 we got out. Well, they were the top.
We have come back to Alphen. As you settled in, how long were you there?
I think we were there something from July to July to maybe near yeah.
And did the German relationships between the prisoners and the Germans, did they improve or deteriorate during that course of time?
No, not basically. They were Bulgarians. The Paka ones were bigger stature. Bulgarians were basically small. Rather than adequate troops, really. But I think when you asked me earlier about the guards, I think the Germans got the wind up. And they put the wind up in every camp we went to. Because we went around the country, we did 2,000 miles easily, right up to Poland. And it was all gathering experience. And the same people were there. One or two, Aaron Lee got up and walked right at Kovitz, the front door. Marvelous. Brilliant thing.
They got the wind up in the sense that they realised that you weren't going to stay there either. You were going to be.
Well, they moved us from Leichen to Poland to Libra, moved down to Swiss France. Libra to Tidmanning to Kassel, right up in the middle of the world, and from Kassel to Eichstadt, and Eichstadt to Kovitz. Well, it took us 5 years to do that, basically, and obviously you get a lot of experience. And maybe my comment just now is a bit of sour grapes, but it touched me in slightly in the wrong way, and I know one or two other chaps who have the same thing.
Was there any black market in the camps?
Oh yes. Yes. Oh yes.
And how did that show itself?
Well, there was a dirty trick played. When we got to Mainz before the train journey, we should have been issued with about 27 marks or something like that. And they halved it. So when they got to Leichen, there was no food, there was nothing to buy. And when they started to sample the food, they got onto this potato business. And there were tons, literally, of potatoes in cellars at was laughing, and it was stinking. It was stinking the whole place up. Again, they knew it. And that was a terrible source of trouble. It wasn't a fit for peace. So that had to be sorted out. So in the end, at Laughlin, they took 500 of us and sent us to Poland.
Just to
tip
the numbers down that were in the
count. Yes, because we were after 1,450. And these were all out of France and Germany. They were all quite a few nationalities. Fundamentally, it was a British camp.
How did that market start in Laughlin?
Yes, the people were buying and selling. Everyone's things got into it, you know, things were in there. You get a bit better there. Soup and coffee, which is just I don't know what it was, but it was supposed to be coffee. The money that you did have was basically to buy razor blades and bits and bobs like that. But that